Welcome back, fellow mystery enthusiasts, to the chilling and enigmatic world of the Dyatlov Pass incident. Shit. That sounded weird, didn't it? Dyatlov Pass. All right, let's try that over again. Welcome back, fellow mystery... Welcome back, fellow mystery enthusiasts, to the chilling and enigmatic world of the Dyatlov Pass incident. In part one of our journey, we delved into the tragic events of that fateful night in the Ural Mountains, where nine hikers met their untimely demise under bizarre and perplexing circumstances. Now, in part two, we're about to plunge headfirst into the vast abyss of theories that shroud this perplexing case. I'm your host, Milky Tea, and today we're going to explore the many theories, from the reasonable to the utterly outlandish, that have been proposed over the years to explain what happened to the Dyatlov group. Was it an avalanche? Military involvement, cryptids, or something even more otherworldly. The mysteries that surround this case are deep and dark, as the Siberian wilderness itself, and we're here to sift through the clues, evidence, and speculation. Some of these theories are grounded in science and logic, while others might stretch. Well, there's no really might about it. While others might stretch the boundaries of your imagination. We'll explore the prevailing theories with a critical eye and see if we can uncover any clues that brings us closer to the truth. But in the end, the Dyatlov Pass incident remains a haunting puzzle, a riddle, that continues to defy a simple solution. So, fasten your seatbelt as we embark on a journey through the frigid and eerie landscapes of Dyatlov Pass. Get ready to explore theories that will challenge your understanding of reality and what can happen in the most desolate and unforgiving of places. Join me on this quest for answers as we venture together deeper into the Dyatlov Pass incident. Part 2, Unraveling the Theories. So first off, it's been a really long time since I've used this microphone. Yeah, lately I've just been using the 3DO, which has its place and time, but I kind of feel like I might have been overusing it. And besides, the mic that I'm currently... Something fell over on my desk. I may decide to edit that out later. I don't know. It depends on how much time I have. Yeah, turns out gotta be honest. I knew that I had to record this before the end of the month. And lo, it is now currently 3:10 p.m. October 31st, 2023. And I am secretly screaming on the inside as I wonder if I can release this in 6 hours. Oh, God. October was a bit of a mess for me. Well, actually, the last couple of months have just been a mess for me between going on vacation, in quotation marks, and then just getting sick, like just consistently, constantly sick. That has made it very difficult to get in front of a microphone, especially for a project like this, just because there's so much research involved. I really wish that I could say that, you know, I just, you know, read word for word verbatim from Wikipedia, but that is not the case. Before I dive into a subject of, you know, whatever topic we're going to cover for that month's podcast, there are a lot of things that I do. First of all, I look for resources. I listen to podcasts. I read books. And of course, I do make a visit to the Wikipedia page because it's such a condensed, you know, they cut out the dross of whatever information that you want to know. The well-edited Wikipedia entries, that is. But anyway, so I realized that part one of the Dyatlov Pass podcast was posted at the end of June. It is now the end of October. And even this is really difficult for me to do, just because everything's been, like, you know, super busy. I'm maintaining two channels. This is turning into a ramble audio, which is not my intention. I'm going to do a ramble because it's the end of the month, but so I'll have to save that material for that particular podcast. Not podcast, that particular audio. But so I apologize for the tardiness in part two. And I honestly, I'm trying to think about why I thought that I could do 2 hour long podcast episodes for my Patreon, which has been steadily decreasing over the last few months. I'm not complaining. I'm still very happy with the patrons that I have now, but it's just, I notice that it's decreasing, and that decrease, I think I can directly correlate to the lack of NSFW content that I've put out. So, you know, you got to keep the masses happy, am I right? And if I wasn't going to do NSFW content, then I should have never started in the first place. Anyways, oh God, this is turning into a ramble. I'm sorry. Long story short, I'm sorry that I can't do 2 1-hour podcasts a month. It's just turning out way too much work for me. It's too much time commitment to do, especially since I've got that second channel up, which now that I'm posting twice a week, Wednesdays and Saturdays, is a lot harder than you think, considering that it's just pre-recycled material from Patreon. But yeah, so next month, I'm not sure what content I want to cover. I think I said that I wanted to cover Mary Celeste at some point. And if you don't know about Mary Celeste is the infamous ship that was discovered floating in open waters. It's either open waters or off the coast of Gibraltar or something. But anyway, so it was like there was no one on the ship. It was a ghost ship, literally. And there were, you know, rumors about how, like, you know, the food was still warm on the table. No, that is not the case. The ship, there was no food out. Okay, that's just pure gossip fodder. But it was a ship that was entirely missing its crew. And that is a very interesting topic that I would love to cover sometime. Not sure if I can get to it next month. Next month, I might try to find something a little easier to, something that has a lot more easily accessible information, and one that I might not have to spend as much time researching. Anyways, right. So, let's get into it. So just to backtrack a bit, let me go through my notes really quickly. So let's go through a quick rewind of the Dyatlov Pass incident. So the Dyatlov Pass incident is, in case you didn't listen to the previous podcast, which I would not be surprised if you didn't because it was posted in June. There's a lot of new people. Welcome. The Dyatlov Pass incident is the event, is an incident where, incident, wow. 9 experienced hikers who were currently attending Earl Polytechnic Institute died in mysterious circumstances between February 1st and 2nd of 1959. And they were not discovered until about 3 weeks later. This created quite a series of conspiracy theories Because, like I said, these group of hikers were they were very experienced. They were young. They knew what they were getting into. And something like this should not have happened, but it did. And that's why we are here. So actually, it's interesting that I do this podcast now because, first, let's go into the theories of what, you know, might have happened during that fateful night of February 1st and 2nd. So, they set up camp. They set up camp in what is now known as Dyatlov Pass. towards Kolot. And if you recognize the name Kolot, it's because it is a horror game on currently available on Steam. I don't know if it's popular, but Markiplier played it, and I'm assuming it is. Okay, so where was I? Did I make notes for this? No, I did not. I did not have time. That is on me. So they set up camp at Kolot. And sometime during the night, they abandoned their camp. And about 3 weeks later, when there was no word about what happened to these students, like obviously, you know, they're college students, most of them, one or two might have been graduates. One might have been a graduate and the other one was not affiliated with the school, but they were a hiker that was supposed to be go with another group, but they ended up going with this group. So when their bodies were discovered about 3 weeks later, they were found about quite a bit far away from the tent that had been slashed open, apparently from the inside. They found footprints that led to a couple of the corpses. And it's interesting because obviously a lot of snow had fallen during those 3 weeks when the parents and the friends of the disappeared hikers were trying to get the school and the authorities to mobilize to get a search party together. They were actually discovered by dogs, by rescue dogs. And the first group that were found were two of them. Let me look up the names really quickly. I cannot pronounce their names. So Yuri Krivonoshenko, and the other dude, Doroshenko. Yuri Krivonoshenko. And Yuri Doroshenko. And these two bodies was very interesting because they were pretty much naked. Like they were in their undies and they did not have any shoes. And they found these two corpses about 1,500 feet away from the initial camp where they found the tent. And they found remains of a campfire that had presumably been set by Krivonoshenko and Doroshenko to, you know, survive the night, which, you know, I mean, y'all are in your undies and you're not wearing shoes. You're not going to make it no matter how big of a fire you're going to put, you know, together. And in between those two bodies and the camp, the searchers located three more bodies and this was of two males and one female. Igor Dyatlov, Rustem Slobodin, and Ludmila Dubanina, I believe. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's Zina Kolmogorova. And these were found actually in a position that suggested that they were trying to make their way back to the camp. And they were actually, they were found about, according to Wikipedia, it says they were found at a distance of 300, 480, and 6, those very precise numbers, from the tree that the first two corpses were found. So we have, so far we have five hikers that are accounted for. The remaining four took quite a bit of time, actually. It was, spring had pretty much fallen by the time that they managed to locate the other four hikers. They were found in a ravine. And these corpses were actually found with better clothes. Like, they actually had clothes on. These clothes that they wore looked as though it had been actually taken from other, from the other hikers. So, suggesting that these particular four hikers may have survived the longest, as they, and due to the fact that they stripped off the clothes from their already dead hike mates. And this, there's a certain, well, we'll get into that in the theories. Anyways, so as soon as they found the bodies, the Russian authorities did a preliminary autopsy, and it was all concluded that they had passed away from hypothermia. And this was just with the four bodies, just after the five bodies, you know, the two at the very beginning, and then the three afterwards. The last four bodies that were found were in such condition that it beggared a lot of questions. So, I'll go into more of their injuries in later, but let's first talk about the most popular theories as to what might have led to their demise. So the first theory would be avalanche. An avalanche may have caused hikers to panic and flee their tent, ultimately leading to their deaths. Proponents of this theory suggest that the group may have heard the rumbling of avalanche and decided to cut their way out of the tent to escape. This would explain why they were in such a hurry to get out and why they were like half-dressed at the time. The second theory is, after I introduce all the theories, I will go into in-depth about each one of them. But let's just go over like the blanket theories first. The second theory is infrasound. Some have proposed that infrasound, which is a low frequency sound that is below the threshold of human hearing, could have been generated by certain natural phenomena and lead to panic and disorientation among the hikers. Because otherwise, how can you explain why a bunch of half-naked people would leave the safety and the warmth of their tent, right, into the freezing cold? However, this theory is, there's not a lot of evidence supporting this theory. The third theory is military involvement. There are some who suggest that the Soviet military was somehow involved in the incident. These theories often point to the fact that the area was used for military testing and that the hiker's injuries were too severe to be explained solely by natural causes. Like I said before, we'll talk about the injuries more later. But there's no really strong evidence to support this theory. The fourth theory is, and this is an interesting one actually, hypothermia and paradoxical undressing. Hypothermia is a leading cause of death in cold environments. You know, obviously. Some believe that the hikers may have experienced hypothermia, which can cause a paradoxical undressing response, where the person removes their clothes due to confusion and an extreme sensation of warmth. This could explain why they were found partially clothed. Yes, absolutely, but it doesn't explain why they were out of their tent in the first place. The fifth theory is, this one's pretty crazy, but I had to mention it. Alien or paranormal activity. And this is where the game Colat kind of comes into play. Some people have suggested more far-fetched theories involving extraterrestrials or paranormal events. Obviously, there's not really any like scientific credibility, and most people don't take this seriously. Then the last major theory is the Mansi people or other human involvement. There have been theories that suggest the indigenous Mansi people or other humans in the area may have been responsible for the hiker's death. However, there is no concrete evidence to support these claims. So let's talk about theory number one, which is the avalanche theory. And it is one of the most widely discussed and accepted explanations for the Dyatlov Pass incident. According to this theory, a small localized avalanche or snow slab may have triggered a series of events that led to the tragic outcome. Let's look at the theory more in depth. So proponents of this theory suggest that the hikers were camping on a slope in a vulnerable area where a relatively small avalanche or a snow slab could have been triggered. The slope may have appeared safe at first, but subtle factors such as wind loading or temperature changes could have destabilized the snowpack. And if the group detected signs of an impeding avalanche, like you don't really have time to like dress, right? If you know, it's like it's like hearing Taiwan does this all the time. We get like an earthquake emergency like warning on our cell phones like 2 seconds before an earthquake. Sometimes we get it while the earthquake is happening, which is like, gee, an earthquake's happening. That's helpful. Thanks, phone. Obviously, if this was the case with the avalanche, you're not going to have time to prepare yourself to get out of the way. You're going to just, you know, try to get out as quickly as possible, right? Something just fell on my desk. It might have been my... Yeah, it was. 1 second. Oh, God, what happened? Right. Sorry about that. Okay, right. Anyway, so you're not really going to have a lot of time to prepare yourself for going out into the freezing cold. You're just going to book it. And that would explain why the tent was slashed from the inside. You know, if you're... Because this tent is not like... It was a pretty big tent. It wasn't like one of those small, like little one-room tents. There was... Igor Dyatlov had actually made his own tent with an engineering friend of his, and it had like room for like a stove, and they had like they had like a little room cordoned off for the ladies. So this was a pretty big tent. So if you are closer to one side of the tent as opposed to like the actual entrance, which is probably tied down, right, to protect you from like the wind and everything, you're gonna cut your way out. It's a lot easier to stab a knife through canvas and just go, right? So once you're out of the tent, it would have been freezing cold, right? Because I've never been in that kind of cold before. I mean, I did live in Chicago for a while, so I guess that does count as cold, but I've never been out in a cold like that, unprepared, for longer than, like, it probably took 30 seconds to get from my back door to the dumpster when I'm taking out the trash at night, right? That's 30 seconds, if that. But, like, these people, these very unfortunate hikers were found like a kilometer away. Like the closest one was found like maybe like 300 meters away, I think, from camp. That's a quarter of a mile. That's really far. And also, like, if it's snowing, which it probably was, and it's blizzard conditions, whiteout conditions, even if there's like 9 of you, if you're running really fast, you're not particularly paying attention to the people around you. The only thing that I think you would be concerned about is self-preservation, right? So the group may have become separated. And then obviously they lost their way in the dark because the avalanche might have covered the tent. You know, there's no light, and making it impossible for them to find their shelter. So it would, you know, obviously, they're up shit creek, right? In the end, right? Or actually, let's talk about some of the injuries. So there were, some of them had broken bones and soft tissue damage. One of them was pretty much missing an eye. One of the ladies was missing a tongue. That tongue one we'll talk about more later. But anyway, so their injuries could have been results of trauma from falling or colliding with objects while trying to escape the avalanche. The severe chest and head injuries suffered by some of the hikers could have resulted from being buried under snow or struck by debris. And when the rescue and investigative teams arrived 3 weeks later and they found the hikers' bodies scattered across the area, the placement of the bodies could be consistent with people trying to return to the tent or regroup after the initial incident. So this theory is supported by the fact that the tent was found cut open from the inside, which indicates a hurried escape, and the tent was situated on a slope where an avalanche could have occurred. Additionally, the weather conditions in the area were known to be severe, with strong winds and sub-zero temperatures. However, there are also criticisms of this theory, which explains why there are multiple additional theories regarding the Dyatlov Pass incident. Some argue that there is no evidence of an avalanche in the area during that time, and the hiker's footprints near the tent do not indicate a panic-induced escape. Additionally, some of the injuries, like the skull fracture and the missing tongue, are not easily explained by avalanche-related trauma. It is, however, one of the most plausible explanations for the incident, but it's far from conclusive. So this is why everyone still keeps talking about it. So let's talk about theory number two. Oh God, this is going to be a long podcast, isn't it? Let's talk about theory number two, which was, if you recall, the infrasound theory, which proposes that infrasound, which is a low frequency sound that is below the threshold of human hearing, may have played a role in the Dyatlov Pass incident by inducing panic, fear, and disorientation in the hikers. So, infrasound, if you don't already know, is a phenomenon that can be generated by various natural sources, such as when passing over mountains or through rocky terrain. It can produce vibrations that humans can't consciously hear, but these vibrations can still affect the human body and mind. Some studies have suggested that exposure to infrasound can lead to physiological and psychological effects, including fears of, including feelings of fear, anxiety, and comfort. I'm sure everyone's probably familiar with this kind of sound. And even if you can't hear it, like, you can't hear it, right? But you don't feel good. Like, your body reacts to it. I think there's a lot of, like, YouTube videos, channels that are dedicated to kind of mimicking that kind of sensation. Yeah, I'll have to look that up and let you guys know later. Anyway, so obviously, when you are subjected to infrasound, you know, it can create feelings of unease, panic, and disorientation. So that could explain why they felt like they needed to get out of the tent in such a hurry, and why it was just so chaotic. So some people think that this would explain their bizarre behavior and their injuries, but there is rightfully some criticism and skepticism regarding this particular theory. So the first one is the exact conditions necessary for infrasound to produce the observed effects are not well documented, and there is very limited scientific evidence supporting a direct link between infrasound and panic-induced behavior. So, also, the Dyatlov Pass incident occurred in a location with little prior documented infrasound activity, and the idea that infrasound alone could have caused the tragedy is speculative at best. Now, there are some people that say that it could be a contributing factor, which leads us into theory three, which suggests that military involvement or encounters with military operations in the vicinity of the Dyatlov Pass may have played a role in the incident. Now, this 1959, this was during the Cold War, if I recall. Let me just check the... And that was when Russia was really ramping up, like, you know, their military activity, and there was a lot of stuff going on. Yes, so the Cold War is, let's see, ran from... Oh, just give me a date. Oh, I see so many dates here. The Cold War began shortly after the end of World War II, started a gradual winding down with Sino-Soviet split between the Soviet and people. So 1961, and ended with the collapse of Soviet Union in 1991. Yeah, so this was during the height of the Cold War. And, you know, you hear a lot of crazy stories about the kind of activities that went on during the Cold War, and even during, like, the... World War II, right? So this theory about the military involvement, it speculates that the hikers inadvertently stumbled upon a military testing or training area and were either deliberately harmed by military personnel or were caught in dangerous military activities. So let's go a little more in depth about this particular theory. There are people who say that the Dyatlov Pass is located in a region that was known for military testing and activities. During the Cold War, the Soviet Union conducted various military exercises, including nuclear testing in remote areas. Some have suggested that the hikers might have been exposed to harmful radiation or chemicals related to military testing. This exposure could explain the strange physical symptoms they exhibited, such as skin discoloration. This is very true. When they were doing the funerals for the hikers, some people pointed out that, hey, so-and-so, they look a lot darker than they should. And there was also, for whatever reason, like a Geiger counter was taken during the search, and they did find a great, maybe not a great deal, but they did find the presence of radioactivity on some of the hikers' clothing. So it is posited, possibly, that the Soviet authorities, if involved in the incident or were aware of it, may have covered up the true cause to protect state secrets. This could include altering evidence or withholding information from the public. There are reports, and even in the diaries that the hikers wrote, they did mention seeing lights in the sky, which some have interpreted as potential military aircraft or unidentified flying objects. But there is, undeniably, there is a lack of concrete evidence linking the military to the incident. No direct proof of military involvement has been found, and official Soviet records from the time are limited. The injuries suffered by the hikers, such as the skull fractures and chest injuries, are not easily explained by military involvement. In addition, the injuries appear to be inconsistent with what might expect from a conventional military operation. So, if they were kind of spitballing here, going off my notes. If they were rounded up by the Soviet police, I don't think that they would have gotten beaten to death with whatever weapons. You know, they probably would have just been shot, right? And there were no evidence of any bullets or bullet holes or casings or anything. Now, some people have suggested that maybe the hikers were subjected to psychological operations, hence the callback to the second theory, which is the infrasound thing. But there, again, there's no evidence that they were even experimenting on this in that area. And because the area where the bodies were found, along with the harsh winter conditions, it was just so remote, and it's so cold, and it's just so out of nowhere, it made it less likely that it could be a site for active military exercises or operations. Yeah, and this theory is probably one of the least prescribed theories regarding the true truth of the hikers. Just because, you know, avalanches and hypothermia is a lot easier and more believable than, like, the KGB or the Soviet army being interested in 9 very patriotic students from the Earl Polytechnic just going on their hike. Theory number 4, which is the hypothermia and paradoxical undressing theory, suggests that hypothermia was a significant factor in the Dyatlov Pass incident, leading to the hikers' strange behavior and untimely deaths. Hypothermia is a condition where the body loses heat faster than it can produce it, resulting in a dangerously low body temperature. The paradoxical undressing response is a phenomenon where individuals suffering from severe hypothermia paradoxically remove their clothing due to a false sensation of overheating. So, this theory starts with the premise that the hikers were exposed to extremely cold temperatures, which was highly likely given the location and time of year of the incident. The Ural Mountains experience harsh winter conditions with temperatures dropping well below freezing. So, as the hikers attempted to camp in these frigid conditions, it's believed that they became progressively colder over time, especially during the night when temperatures plummeted. Hypothermia would have set in gradually, leading to confusion, disorientation, and impaired judgment. When hypothermia becomes severe, some individuals experience paradoxical undressing, which is a phenomenon in which they remove their clothing despite the freezing conditions. So, as a result, the hikers may have undressed or removed their clothing, which could explain why they were found partially clothed or even naked. And because of this, because of their chaotic and irrational behavior, such as cutting the tent open from the inside and leaving their tent barefoot, it could be attributed to the effects of severe hypothermia and the confusion it induces. The group might have been attempting to return to their tent for warmth and shelter, but became disorientated and separated in the process. So I guess you could prescribe to this theory because they didn't have enough clothes on and like a couple of them were barefoot. Well, almost barefoot. I think they were wearing shoes, but, so they were very ill prepared for the weather conditions. However, there is a great deal of skepticism to this particular theory because, some of the injuries that they received, such as the broken bones and the absence of soft tissue damage, chest injuries, you can't explain that just solely from hypothermia. And in their diary, they did mention that there were sightings of strange lights and other unusual phenomena in the area. And this theory assumes that these 9 very experienced outdoors people, because there's men and women, outdoors people did not have access to appropriate cold weather clothing, which would be very odd because several of the same hikers who passed away had made this same trek before, the year before. So it makes no sense that suddenly, you know, they find that they don't have enough clothes on. So now we're going to go into like the crazy theories, which is, it's a favorite of some people just because of how outlandish it is. But this one is the alien or paranormal activity theory. This theory suggests that extraterrestrials or supernatural forces may have been involved in the hikers' deaths. They think that the hikers might have encountered unidentified flying objects or UFOs or beings of extraterrestrial origin during their expedition due to the fact that there were some mentions and reports in the diaries of the hikers that mentioned, you know, strange lights in the sky, which some interpret as potential UFO sightings, but which is probably, honestly, like Russian aircraft. You know, some versions of this theory go a step further and suggest that the hikers were abducted by aliens. It is believed that they were taken aboard a spacecraft and subjected to various experiments or experiences, which could explain their disorientation and strange injuries. Beyond UFOs, though, some do argue that paranormal forces or entities may have played a role in the hikers' deaths. And this is where the game Colat comes into play, because the game Colat kind of blames, you know, like a Wendigo or like a Yeti for attacking the hikers. There's no evidence. It's just a fun theory. Oh, I should have said it like the guy from Game Theory. Yeah. It's just a food theory. Oh, whatever. I forget how he says it. So, yeah, it's... I mean, obviously the series gained a lot of attention because of its admittedly batshit insane nature. But it's... I think... The majority of experts and investigators, they don't consider the alien and paranormal theory to be a credible or scientifically valid explanation for the Dyatlov Pass incident. It's intriguing for some, but it remains largely in the realm of speculation and rightfully has not gained widespread acceptance in the field of investigation and research surrounding the incident. The last theory is suggests that the indigenous Mansi people or other humans in the area may have been involved. This theory proposes that the hikers may have encountered the Mansi or other individuals who lived in the region and were either attacked or otherwise affected by them. So the Mansi are an indigenous people who traditionally inhabit the Ural Mountains, including the area of the Dyatlov Pass. So some versions of this theory suggest that the hikers might have stumbled upon Mansi territory or encroached on their lands. And the people that kind of prescribe to this theory, they argue that the hikers, their presence may have led to a confrontation with the Mansi or other locals. It could have turned violent and resulted in actions that led to the deaths of the hikers. So, going along this theory, there's also some people who believe that the hikers might have been robbed by the locals, which led to a struggle or dispute. The injuries suffered by the hikers, such as skull fractures and the chest injuries, could have been seen as evidence of a physical confrontation. And if the hikers felt threatened or were under attack, they might have fled their tent in a state of panic and disarray. Cutting the tent open from the inside and leaving without proper clothes could be explained by a desperate attempt to escape danger. Alternatively, some versions of this theory suggest that the Soviet authorities may have sought to cover up any evidence of local involvement to avoid potential conflicts with the indigenous population or out of concerns for national security. This theory is probably even more unbelievable than the UFO theory. Because there is no conclusive evidence to support the involvement of the Mansi people or other locals in the incident. They've denied any involvement, and the hikers' diaries, they don't mention any hostile encounters. The injuries suffered by the hikers, particularly the severity of the fractures, have led some to question whether human involvement alone can explain the extent of their injuries. Now, an interesting an interesting theory is that maybe a Mansi sorcerer conjured up a Yeti to go after these hotshot college kids. That's just my theory. I believe this theory even less than the UFO one. At least the UFO one's kind of fun. But this one actually, the Mansi people actually really helped a lot during the search for the hikers, actually, when they went missing. I want to say it might have actually been one of a Mansi tracking dog that did locate the first group of bodies that inevitably led to the discovery of the other ones. So yeah, those are all the theories. And it's actually interesting because in so up until a few years ago, like there were all kinds of theories flying around about what happened to the 9 hikers from Earl Polytechnic Institute. But in 2021, let me look this up really quickly. The Russian government actually came out. Here we go. So there's an article on Vice. Okay, so video filmed during. Okay. So the Russian government actually came out and said, hey, look, we think this is the best theory and possibly the, you know, most plausible explanation. So there was a video filmed during a recent expedition bolsters the leading theory that the mysterious deaths were caused by a special type of avalanche. So a pair of scientists based in Switzerland presented video evidence collected on site. And apparently it was the tragedy was due to something called a slab avalanche, which is a special type of deadly snowslide that can strike on low angled slopes. So Alexander Puzrin, and I'm reading directly from the article. Don't sue me, Vice. Alexander Puzrin, actually, no, I should cite my source. Written by Becky Ferreira. Postmark, March 25th, 2022. I'll post the link in the Patreon post for those of you that want to actually read it themselves. Alexander Puzrin, a professor of geotechnical engineering at ETH Zurich, and Johann Gamme, head of the snow and avalanche simulation laboratory at École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. Sorry if I butcher that. First pinpointed a slab avalanche as the potential cause of the deaths in a study published in 2021. Let's see. So in the year since publication of our article, we helped them to organize 3 successful expeditions to Dyatlov Pass, Puzrin and Gom said in a study published on Thursday in Communications, Earth and Environment last year. Yeah, so this was posted last year. The direct evidence from the Dyatlov Pass area obtained in those expeditions confirms that the region is avalanche prone and that slopes above the location where Igor Dyatlov and his group pitched their tent are steep enough for avalanches to release, the team continued. Independent research by Russian snow and climate scientists supported assumptions and the main results of our slab avalanche modeling. The new research demonstrates that slab avalanches occur in the same region and under similar weather conditions to those experienced by Dyatlov and his companions on that fateful night of February 1, 1959. Though avalanches have long been discussed as a possible cause of death for the group, questions have been raised about the odd injuries on the bodies, which did not neatly fit with typical avalanche trauma, the shallowness of the slope where they died, and the lack of any sign of snow slides by the rescuers who discovered the body. Indeed, much of the fascination with the Dyatlov Pass incident stems from the weird state of the group's remains, which were found in various locations downslope from where they had pitched their tent. 4 of the hikers had severe chest or skull injuries, 2 were missing eyes, 1 had lost a tongue, and some were naked. The eerie nature of the corpses has led to their deaths being variously attributed to, quote, an infrasound-induced panic, animals, attacks by yetis or local tribesmen, katabatic winds, a snow avalanche, a romantic dispute. So, going into romantic dispute really quickly, let me just look up. Okay, so apparently there was a love triangle between Igor Dyatlov, Zina Kolmogorova, and Semyon Zolotarov. Yeah. That's actually not right. So Xena was, I think I said it in the previous podcast. I can't remember. It was back in June and I didn't have time to listen to the previous part one. I'm sorry. She was a very vivacious girl who was very charismatic and apparently like all the guys liked her. So that explains the romantic dispute, right? Poor Ludmila. or maybe it was Ludmila who was the charismatic cutie. Anyways, okay, so so romantic dispute, KGB / CIA secret activities, ballistic rockets, or nuclear weapons test, according to the new study. In their 2021 study, Pusrin and Gaume argued that slab avalanches could provide an answer to the mystery while satisfying most of the oddities surrounding the deaths. Slab avalanches happen when a slab-like layer of snow is positioned on top of a weaker layer, creating dangerously pent-up pressure that can be released by a relatively small trigger. The researchers suggested that the pitching of the tent might have set off a fatal chain of events that eventually led to a slab falling on the sleeping hikers, causing severe trauma in some of them, and prompting the rest to run into the night without proper gear where they ultimately succumbed to the cold. So, yeah, let me think. I don't want to, like, straight up read the whole article, even though I've already kind of done it. So, if you are interested, I will link to it in the Patreon post. But I do think that slab theory, the slab avalanche theory, is probably what happened. It's very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very believable. That's not the word I'm looking for, but it's close enough. Of course, you know, you can always like posit this theory, which I think is the truth, to those who might have wanted to prescribe to the UFO or they were killed by a Wendigo theory. And, you know, they probably don't want to believe it, but, you know. I believe it, so that's all that matters, right? Anyways, so let's go into the outro here. The mysterious deaths of the hikers at Dyalov Pass have captivated the imagination of the world for over six decades. In the winter of 1959, nine experienced and adventurous hikers embarked on a journey into the Ural Mountains of Russia, only to meet a tragic and unexplained end. The circumstances surrounding their deaths have given rise to a multitude of theories, each attempting to unravel the enigma of what truly happened on that fateful night. The Dyatlov Pass incident, as it has come to be known, is a chilling and perplexing tale of human exploration gone awry. The group, led by Igor Dyatlov, set out with the intention of conquering the challenging and isolated terrain of the Ural Mountains. They were well prepared and experienced, and their journey was meticulously planned. Yet something went terribly wrong during the expedition, leading to their untimely demise. The Dyatlov Pass incident is a reminder of the unpredictability and danger that can accompany even the most well-prepared expeditions into the wilderness. It serves as a cautionary tale, urging all adventurers to respect the power of nature and the unpredictability of remote and harsh environments. While the case remains unsolved, technically, it probably will not be forgotten for a very long time. The memory of the hikers and their quest for adventure endures. Their story has inspired books, documentaries, and countless discussions. The Dyatlov Pass incident has taken on a life of its own, evolving into a modern-day mystery that continues to captivate those who seek to uncover the truth. In conclusion, the Dyatlov Pass incident remains one of the most enduring and perplexing mysteries of the 20th century. As we contemplate the various theories and speculate on what might have happened that chilling night, we must remember that the truth may forever remain elusive. The enigma of Dyatlov Pass stands as a testament to the complexities of human exploration and the enduring allure of the unknown. So yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for sticking around for part two, like 4 months after part one was posted. Yeah, so I guess I'll see you guys on Discord. If you're not already part of Discord, come on by. We're a lot of fun. Usually we'll play games like every other day or so. You know, we'd love to have you. All right, guys. So I don't know if any of you guys are going to be sleeping, but if you are, sleep tight and don't let the bed bugs bite.